This is the Experience Points podcast for the week of July 24th, 2013, and we already knew that assholes could create podcasts, but can they create video games?
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Asshole. I mean, Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
And we're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a home for family-friendly conversations.
Oh, man.
About video games, culture. You know, we're nice guys, I think, Scott.
Yeah, today we're going to put the, I think we have the explicit tag on it every week, so it really doesn't make any difference.
This week on the show, we'll be using the word asshole a lot. We're talking about meaty heads, unkind people.
Big ruffians, heads.
Whole shebang.
Yeah.
We're inspired this week by an article by Ben Kuchera over at Penny Arcade Report. It's called Why You Want Assholes to Make Your Video Games. And using a conversation he had with Tan Teasdale, he goes off about why, you know what, maybe it is the roughneck auteurs, the truly creative people who push everyone aside to make fantastic works of art. They are the ones that we need to laud. They are the ones that are making excellent games. And maybe we need assholes in our life.
Maybe. But that's not what Rob thinks, right?
Yes, of course. Rob Farron from We Make the Cops Look Dumb has written a response to Kuchera's piece called Assholes Are Assholes, where he basically just says, no, you know what? Screw assholes. They can just go off and do their thing. And, you know, we don't need them. We, should criticize them. They don't deserve any of our attention. You know, assholes are assholes, and that's that.
Right.
So I think it's a good conversation to have in general about a variety of subjects, everything from how people position themselves in the games industry, both creators and critics, how people talk about what assholes are, and maybe how people's opinions and behavior in the larger game space affects how we view their games and whether or not we even play them.
Right. And so, I mean, this whole thing got spurred by, like you were saying, Ben's interview with Dan Teasdale, who's, you know, leaving the mainstream, large publishing industry. Actually, I mean, honestly, like Harmonix and Twisted Pixel, not exactly like huge corporate structures or whatever. So that's kind of weird. But I mean, you know, he's, according to the article, you know, he's consulted for Irrational. You know, he was at Pandemic. Like, you know, he's been all over the place. But I mean, you know, it was controversial because, you know, the name of his new studio is No Goblin, which is a reference to him being sick of
goblins.
Yeah, I mean, he's like,
God, just
sick of these motherfucking goblins in this motherfucking dungeon. Like,
and naturally, the goblin community, they've really responded unkindly to that.
Yes, that's the anti-goblin defamation league. But you know, he's tired of what is largely perceived and is sometimes true of like the fairly narrow milieu of games between either swords and sorcery or, you know, lasers and spaceships.
Right.
And so, you know, he's broken off to, you know, make something different and, you know, had some, you know, somewhat plain spoken words about exactly that and, you know, how tired he is of it.
I love that plain spoken words. That's such a good word choice there, Scott.
Well, I mean, but that's the thing. So, I mean, before this article, was Dan Teasdale even like a normal recurring thought in your mind?
No, not at all.
Yeah, me neither. I mean, I knew of him, didn't know a huge amount about him. And then after reading the article, I didn't really think, you know, I wasn't really offended. I didn't take too much umbrage with it. Like,
yeah. So I'm just going to read a sentence and we'll decide whether or not this is an asshole sentence.
Yeah.
How about that? He says, I love Naughty Dog games, but I would probably shoot myself if I had to spend 2 years working on 12 hours of linear content that people only play through once and shelf.
Right.
That sounds about right, or what do you think?
That's the thing. It's not like he's, that's why I make this, and maybe I just have weird, like, you know, maybe I'm just socially
maladjusted. Maybe you're just an asshole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's like, but I mean, that is, wrapped up in that statement is not so much about the people, you know, he's not calling out the people who work on those. It's more of a systemic thing.
That's true, but at the same time, if you're working on those games, you could see how one could interpret that as being somewhat antagonistic, right? I mean, if you don't like, You know, what's that? There's like a great line from Firefly I always think of, but it's like, if you don't like something, then what must you think about the people who devote their life to that thing?
Right. Right. That's true. And I mean, it's something that we're like kind of careful about. Like, I feel like, you know, he's kind of on the other side of the line that we generally try to walk. Like, I mean, let's talk about Naughty Dog specifically. Matthew Gallant. We love that guy.
Yeah.
We just had a podcast recently where we kind of ripped on the game that he helped make. You know?
Yes. Yeah.
And it's nothing personal against him. And honestly, I thought the game was pretty okay. But there were like some parts of it that I really wanted to dig into. And, you know, I guess it's all about how you kind of package that criticism, you know?
Yeah. And to some extent, you know, you're going to need a thick skin if you're going to be working in the industry, right? Like, no one goes into a game where they're working with a studio that's like hundreds of people and go, if this game isn't the best thing I've ever made, then goddammit, I'm retiring, right? Like, that doesn't really happen.
Right. Well, and also, like, you know, whether it's at work or our own writing, like, we create things every day that I could go on forums and just watch people rip into them. You know,
that's true. Yeah.
And so like it's a very strange,
you know, and it's mostly me though, just to,
it's like, wait a second, why is George talking about my professional life? We just write a website together. So I mean, it's, you know, part of it is the interpretation of it, but then, you know, another part of it is talking about the systemic nature of it. And it is like, I mean, that is a, it's not an unfair description of Naughty Dog games, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. How many people play the games over and over again? Like, he wants to make systemic games that, you know, people interact with over and over again in a dynamic way rather than think about as more of a linear story. Like, that's a completely true fact about the way that they make games versus the way that someone, I don't know, that any like SimCity or something like that, you know, that's a true fact to say about Naughty Dog. But like, I guess it's the way he couches it, you know, can rub people the wrong way.
You mean when he says he'd rather shoot himself in the head?
Right. Well, and that's also like, yeah, that's pretty, you know, if you've ever had an experience with people that have done violence to themselves, that could definitely be a pretty rough thing to hear.
You know, this subject sort of comes up and has come up recently when we were talking about the marketing strategies for Hitman, the Hitman game, as well as the Xbox One.
Yeah.
Because part of it is that, look, I mean, in this day and age, especially if you're doing an interview with Ben Kutera from the Penny Arcade Report, right? You are not speaking into an empty room. Like, there are thousands of people watching you.
Yeah.
And so, you know what? Even if you want to be heated and talk about how much you really hate one type of game or another, I think it's generally good practice to know that you're being watched and to be wary of what types of things that you say, right? Like, the conversations that you and I have in private might not be the same conversations or phrasings or tone that we have when we're in a public place or when we're, you know, at a company lunch or something, right? Like, there are specific, you know, behaviors and normative behaviors. And I think in general, we're all taught to sort of adapt to the environment that we find ourselves in.
Yeah.
And when you're in an interview in a games industry space where you have to see a lot of people in your everyday life, like the people you're working with today, you're going to be working for them again in 5 years and they're your friends' friends and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. You got to be careful. You have to be considerate of what other people might think about what you said or how they interpret what you said.
Yeah.
So I think it's even less about what you say exactly, but like the intent that you have when you say it and whether or not you're doing it so flippantly, right?
Yeah. Well, and also it's rough because no matter what you intend, people are going to experience it the way they experience it. And so the question then becomes, are we okay with some people, you know, being the pariahs that we need in order to keep some sort of conversation going? Because,
like, are they the Batman?
Yeah. I mean, but yeah. I mean, like, honestly though, like, it is, again, it's like your personal, it's your personal experience of how you interpret what they say. But I'm okay with Phil Fish kind of being a troublemaker because he does raise interesting questions that if people are being too guarded, we never hear raised. Like, I mean, we talked about this a little bit, but, you know, the idea that if you open up like a literary magazine, some kind of book review, it's often written by other authors.
Right.
And it's so rare that other game developers review games.
That's definitely true. But I wouldn't call Phil Fish's rants reviews, though.
No, I wouldn't. But he does bring up good points about how what a mess the Japanese game industry is.
Yeah, but he's not the only one. Like, there are other people who've talked about it. Maybe not so pointedly, right? Like, I think one of the bigger concerns is and this is something where I think sometimes I could sway to Kuchera's point, mm-hmm. right? Which is that sometimes saying it nicely isn't enough. Like, yeah. sometimes you have to say things, you know, antagonistically. If you want to get attention, sometimes you have to use the F-bomb now and again.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see circumstances where you could look at what Phil Fish says about the Japanese games industry and go, okay, yeah, maybe it was a little untactful in the time and place, but they needed to hear that, mm-hmm. right? But the issue is, it's not just Phil Fish saying this one time, right? If someone was a generally nice person and they were seen as kind-hearted and lauded among the community, and they had one slip-up where they just went really hostile mm-hmm. and were passionate about a subject and people were offended, then I could imagine you could have a relatively good conversation out of that, yeah. right? But the problem is Phil Fish has this persona of being an asshole, and he thinks he wants that persona, mm-hmm. right? If it were someone who was, like, who's a really nice guy from the games industry, like, everyone's favorite, I don't know,
how about
Tim Schafer, maybe?
I was just going to say Tim Schafer.
Yeah, like, what if Tim Schafer was, like, in an interview, and it was like, you know what? Fuck those Dragon Age guys. Like, they make shitty games. Everyone who works for them, like, they are awful, right? Like, everyone would be shocked. It would be shocking. And he'd come out, and he would say, look, I'm really sorry, but, like, you know, my daughter was playing Dragon Age last night, and I was furious, and she's only 9, or, you know, like, something. Like, he could come up with an excuse. Mm-hmm. Everyone would go, oh, yeah, you know what, Tim, you really should have watched your mouth, but I think that some of the points you want to say could have been said this way, and, you know, we could learn something about it, mm-hmm. right? But there are other people who are just assholes mm-hmm. and just kind of want to kick the hornet's nest because it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, there's this concept of the heel in wrestling, and I feel like it kind of goes...
I don't know this term. What is the heel in wrestling?
The heel is like the bad guy, the guy that you okay. love to boo.
Is it similar to the people's elbow?
The heel usually is on the receiving end of the people's elbow.
Oh, okay. All right. You know, oh, this is like the role that you play when you're because this is all play acting, right? Wrestling?
Well, little known fact, The Rock actually started off as a hero and made the transition.
Oh, and to become a villain.
Well, he started off... Oh, actually, wait, no. I think during the Attitude Era, he was a heel, and then he turned face, and then he's been pretty much a good guy ever since. There's experiencepoints.net wrestling minute, everyone. Thank you. But, I mean, there's the point of, like, people like you are saying, take on this persona, and I think Phil Fish is probably a great example of this, who are kind of like, hey, this is the rascal that you love to hate. And, like, he mm-hmm. mixes it up on Twitter on purpose, definitely. Like, he could definitely be quiet if he wanted to. You know, but, yeah. I mean, he gets people riled up. And, I mean, every outrageous statement he makes keeps people reminded that Fez 2 is on the horizon. You know, like, it's...
I'm glad you use this heel example, though, Scott, because I think the further away the games industry is from pro wrestling, the better. Like, we don't need a heel. I don't think we need The Rock. Like, I don't... You know, I think that in general, and maybe I'm just being like super Berkeley hippie, mm-hmm. you know, dude, but I think in general, we're better off if everyone's just kind of nice to each other.
Yeah, I mean, I think,
that's to say there are reasons to be angry.
Yeah.
And voicing that anger. Right. But, you know, time, place, context, those things matter.
Well, I mean, I think there's this, especially, you know, people are romanticized when they are kind of maverick creators that don't compromise their vision.
Yes.
And uncompromising people generally rub other folks the wrong way because, you know, the way you stay alive as a human being is getting along with other humans.
Yeah, exactly. So good luck making an awesome game if everyone hates your guts. Like, yeah. Who's going to publish that?
Well, I mean, and that's why I think the rise of the democratization of publishing means that these 1-2 person operations where it is kind of harsh personalities, you know, they can exist in a way that they couldn't have existed in the studio system. Or, I mean, you know, to be realistic, they do exist in the studio system. They just never get to be the public face of the game.
Right, right. For good reason.
Yeah, I mean, think of all the fucking assholes that are in game companies that are just because it's any other workplace, you know?
Yep.
Like, law of statistics says that a certain number of people are just going to be flat-out jerks, you know?
Yeah, we probably meet and probably work with some of these people.
Yeah, I mean, I know they're saying it about me, so, like, I'm happy saying it about somebody. And so, like,
Right.
And but I mean, when you have this, you know, you have social media giving everyone the opportunity to be their own hype man and their own PR person and their own creative director. And like, so it's like you can, it's very much like, it's almost, you know, this romanticizing the individual creator has gotten even easier because you can isolate that person and you know exactly who's making Fez because he's on Twitter calling you a jerk directly.
It sounds like what you're saying is that, like, in the indie development scene in particular lends itself to people being assholes.
Well, I mean, it also goes the opposite direction. Like, you know, I mean, we would never have gotten Sissy's Magical Pony Corn Adventure.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, we would have...
And there's a lot of... There's a strong community in the indie scene of people helping each other out and not being total dicks about it.
Right. I mean, just, like, the indie fund in general was started by, you know, was helped... funded and, you know, partially run by Jonathan Blow, who is looked at as, you know, by many people as kind of a jerk.
Right.
And so, you know, it gets a little bit complicated, but I mean, you know, I think there is a bias to kind of see these brash, you know, these brash people, and they do kind of take up more of the spotlight just because they're willing to put themselves out there. But that doesn't mean necessarily that our favorite games or even the best games are made by those people. Like, we just recently played The Swapper, and like, there's barely any people on that team. I was shocked when I got to the credits.
Yeah.
Like, it was
That's a great game.
Yeah, it's a great game. It's such a small team, and I know nothing about the people that are on it because it seems like they just kind of, you know, kept to themselves and made a great game.
Yeah, because they're probably really nice. They're probably humble, and they don't want to take the spotlight.
Who knows? But, I mean, there's also the opposite direction where, like, some of our favorite games from last year, like... Journey, you know, Genova Chen, Kelly Santiago,
total asshole, right? Like assholes.
Yeah, well, they seem like real jerks, you know. I mean, like, seemingly some of the nicest people in the industry. And you know, the Idle Thumbs guys, you know, Jake and Sean were the lead writers behind The Walking Dead. You know, obviously they're nice, and they still are able to criticize games without, you know, alienating a bunch of people. Like, for every David Jaffe, there's, you know, there's a Ken Levine. Like, you know, there are high profile people that are kind of auteurs in their own right, but they still, you know, they operate very differently in terms of how they interact with the press and the public and most likely even their studios, you know?
Yeah. The press thing is, I think, particularly unsettling to me in light of Kuchera's piece, though, right? Is because you use that term, they get more of the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an outspoken, sort of hostile or contentious individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that strategy of sort of marketing and gaining PR is disconcerting to me because I think you're right. Like, if someone, even an indie developer, if it's a game that is potentially seemingly possible, mm-hmm. if they call someone else out, right, that sort of petty arguments... That's the kind of shit that you see in celebrity gossip mags.
Right.
You know, of like, oh, you know, Prince, what's his face, called out the Italian prime minister, right. Or like, you know, what did Kanye say this week? Oh, how nutty. That shit is awful. Like, it's absolutely garbage.
Right.
And it's completely distracting of the actual content of these games.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if we look at someone and say, oh, yeah, like, you know, we do have people like Ken Levine, but the people who are really outspoken assholes, if we really do say, oh, well, you know, that's okay. Maybe they need to be assholes, or that's okay. That's just their personality. I think we're undermining our own ability to provide accountability within that space and say, look, we don't want to give attention to these people.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to feed the trolls.
Right.
You know, this guy's an asshole. Let's just forget about him. Let's just not talk about him. Let's not play his game.
Well, and I think that was, you know, Rob's point is well taken. You know, in that same vein, it doesn't have to be that way. And part of the power that they have is the power that people give them.
Right.
There's plenty of people, like you were saying, you know, it's on the long run when you look at it, you know, from kind of on a career scale, like I doubt that the people who are mean to folks are going to come out ahead of the people that are actually getting along with their colleagues and doing things respectfully. But I mean, I think, I do want to play this little like mind game here, which is what games do you like that were created by folks that you later, or you, I guess all media is fair game here, but like, you know, do you enjoy games that you think are made by people who are uncompromising in a way that maybe is a little bit jerky?
Jerky.
Because I love Braid. Like, Braid is one of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah, I also like Braid quite a bit. But at the same time, I can still call someone out for being an asshole, right?
Right.
I think to some extent, And this is a heated conversation when you start bringing up people like Roman Polanski and Orson Scott Card.
But yeah.
The appreciation of an artistic endeavor outside of the person's behavior.
Yeah.
That being said, it's not something... Like, I think we can criticize Jonathan Blow and still say Braid is really good, right? At least for me, this is an issue of building up trust, right?
Yeah.
Like, I want to feel comfortable playing the games that I play. I want to feel like the people who made them care about the game. They care about, their players and their thoughts on their game, and they weren't being total jerks.
Mm-hmm.
And so there comes a point where I go, you know what? I really dug Braid. If I play Jonathan Blow's next game and he's an asshole again, maybe I'll play that too. But the third time comes around, who knows? Maybe I'll say, no, I'm going to pass.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think Phil Fish has the persona of being a total jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is something that he cultivates. He presents himself as an asshole, and I don't want to reward that.
Right.
You know, if he wanted to do a turnaround and wanted to present himself as someone who was like a really kind-hearted person, that's fine. And I'm sure he's a great person in real life, and I'm sure that, he feels like he should be angry and hostile sometimes, and that's okay too, right? Like, I'm not, I am a fan of the ASLU here. Like, I will protect your right to be an asshole.
Right.
But it doesn't mean I have to consume your work.
Yeah, yeah. Just as a little tangent, how much of it do you think is tied to, like, a somewhat, because especially these two folks in general, I feel like there's somewhat of a latent kind of, almost like conservative, not in the political sense, but in the, like, we don't want things to change type sense of, like, almost anti-intellectualism. Like, the reason why people didn't like Jonathan Blow is because he was trying to say something big with this dinky little game he made.
Yeah.
And, like, honestly, you know, you read reviews afterwards, and, like, basically the reason why people thought he was kind of a jerk is that he would contradict folks for, you know, folks would put out their theory about Braid, he would contradict them but not really offer anything.
Yeah, he'd go out of his way to do it as well.
Right. I mean, he'd go out of his way to kind of continue to challenge people to see something more than they were seeing.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's not, you know, I think some of that is just that people are not used to games or game creators operating in that way, you know, having a higher standard for folks like that.
Yeah, that's definitely true. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I'm not saying like the popular opinion against either of these people are necessarily justified.
Right. Yeah. It's hard though, because I mean, I do enjoy games that I know for a fact, like the creators, like, you know, like David Jaffe in particular, like David Jaffe is always getting in trouble because he's always saying stupid shit.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think his games are always, you know, and he has that kind of driven mindset where, you know, whether you like him or hate him or not, like, you know, his games are going to have a vision, you know?
Yeah.
Whether that vision is like a flaming clown skull, like, you know, you may not like it, but, like, you know, the idea that, I mean, you know, God of War changed a lot of things about video games from the mid-2000s onward.
Yeah.
And, like, you have to realize that, like, that must have been a fight for him to make that game.
Yeah, totally. But at the same time, like, you could be like, oh, gosh, I love these God of War games. You're kind of a dick. You know what I mean? Like, you could do both. I'm fine if people want to play games made by people that are controversial.
Mm.
That's totally fine. My issue, though, is that we shouldn't let things pass. You know, we shouldn't go, oh, how silly, they're being a jerk again.
Right.
Like, you know, that's what I'm not cool with. Like,
right.
I think if someone's being a jerk, they should be called out for being a jerk. And if even if people disagree, right, like, then that conversation is going to be better, and we're all going to be better for it if we have that conversation than if we don't and just let things pass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the same thing goes to me, right? I would rather have someone say, George, you're being a jerk.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if I disagree with him, then so be it. And if I realize the error of my ways, that's fine. But what I don't want is people, you know, who think that I'm being a jerk, not saying anything and then just letting it rest. And I continue to be a jerk because I'm not learning the error of my ways.
Mm. Opening Pandora's box here, my friend.
If you want to email me about being an asshole.
I think there's also another thread happening here, is that, you know, the video games by their nature are, like, most games anyway, unless you are one of those few talented folks that can have a team of, you know, very, very small to, like, make a game. Like, you know, traditional published video games are huge, huge endeavors, and so cooperation is an inherent part of it. And so when you have someone whose opinion has more weight than other people's in the organization, it's going to cause tension.
Yes,
but,
definitely.
You know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, because sometimes you do need that strong central driving force, you know, like I'm sure there's plenty of yelling matches in Irrational because Ken Levine seems like he knows what he likes and he wants to make sure it gets into the game.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes it's for the best, you know?
I'm sure you've had this experience, though, right? Like, these are strategies, right? Yeah. Like, how you have these conversations, how you get your point across. If you're the person who has final say, mm-hmm. and you're working with a team of people who kind of disagree with you, it's your duty, your obligation to convince them.
Yeah.
And if you can't convince them, and sometimes that's the case, sometimes you have to draw the line and say, you know what, this is it, this is law.
Right.
What I say goes.
Right.
Right? Like, that's how you do all of these things. Like, there are books written about this stuff. This is all managerial shit that comes down the pipe, right?
Right.
Like, how to express yourself with tact in these heated environments where there are power differentials is a skill.
Mm-hmm.
And the best designers, the best employees and employers and bosses are people who've really mastered that skill.
Yeah.
And you can practice it, right? Like, to some extent, going to college is an act of practicing this exactly. Right? You're working with teams. You're, like, working on projects together, right? Like, the reason people like to hate, I mean, college students in particular like to hate on group projects, but the reason group projects exist is not to make you have some great final work that you can publish. It's to make you practice at what you're going to be doing for the rest of your life, yeah. which is working with other people.
Unless you go and live in a cave with Phil Fish.
And J.D. Salinger. Yeah, I mean, exactly, right? Like, those are your options. Either, you know, be with mankind,
yeah.
or go, like, fucking into the wild and, you know, go on a make a game on a bus somewhere in the woods, right?
Yeah.
That's fine. You can do that too.
Yeah.
But for the most part, most of us are going to be working with other people. And even if you're a visionary, you're going to be a better one if you can get people on your side, if you can convince people, right? Share that passion.
Yeah. Yeah. So just as like a final thing, do you think that as the creators and as the players of video games start to interact more and more, do you think that the creators will kind of be like a stronger opinion, or do you think there will be more swaying, you know, kind of undermining the traditional, like, head asshole thing?
Yeah, so I think this is one of the more interesting things,
yeah.
especially when it comes to, like, you know, like, the idea of community management and stuff, because you're right. I don't know. I really don't know, because at this point now, you get little indie game studios that are, like, you know, hugely successful, massive games, and they're literally talking one-on-one with their players.
Yeah.
Right? What happens when they say, I know that all of you guys want this. We've gotten 3,000 emails, but you're all wrong.
Yeah.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
I mean, and now it just happens behind closed doors. Like, there's I was reading kind of a postmortem of Super Mario Galaxy, and the team was talking about how, like, you know, they'd have periodic meetings with Miyamoto, and he'd be like, actually, the cooldown on this spin needs to be, like, 2.5 seconds longer or something.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it was. And, like, it ended up being the completely right decision. But, like, they were like, yeah, I mean, it just kind of overturned our work for the past 3 weeks or whatever. And, like, you know, we had to redo a bunch of shit.
But,
like,
true.
Now when there's more transparency, like, these people are going to be, like, accountable to the folks on the forums a lot more.
Yeah, on the Kickstarter.
Right. I mean, it's yeah. I don't know. I guess we'll just have to see. But I don't know. I find that pretty fascinating. Like, if it will empower the traditionally, you know, the traditionally strong-headed people, or if it will just kind of, you know, will the asshole be a crowdsourced asshole? You know, like, will that be the, you know, the paradigm going forward?
I mean, if you build up enough of a persona, right, then
yeah.
sure. Like, people will throw money your way anyway.
Yeah.
Some people like assholes, right? Like, it just makes me think of, like, high school, right?
Mm.
You'd get those, like, one asshole, and then he'd have, like, demigod assholes. It's like little asshole minions, you know?
Right, right.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting to think about how that might take off.
Yeah. So the key is to have strong opinions, but to be nice about it. Is that our conclusion?
I think that's the key. Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, like, there are times when you've got to get your shit done and
yeah.
you don't have time to take it to a council and convince someone, and
yeah.
you just have to get it done. But then, you know, that's going to cost you some trust and stuff. So you got to come back to it later on.
Yeah. You know, it would be fun. We should have a collection of games that are made by people that folks that conventional wisdom thinks are jerks and conventional
so like
wisdom thinks
collection.
Are nice, and then see
oh.
and then just play them all.
I like that idea a lot, and just try to see, like, are there certain design trends.
Yeah, or even if you want to double blind it, we could involve the people, or I guess just single blind it, like, if, you know, people listening to this, just, like, send us games, titles of games hopefully that we don't know, and we could just play them, and then we could try to guess if, like, the leads were jerks or not.
Yeah, but how many people would volunteer and go, you know what, I'm an asshole, yeah, here you go, play my game.
Well, we could do it by, you know, the rule of the mob, you know, like, let's, you know, we could crowdsource it again.
I'm all for that. I will gladly play those
games. Okay, we're going to start creating a list of jerk games and cool dude games.
Cool dude. Or dudettes.
Cool, yeah. Cool folk games versus jerk folk games. And then we'll see if we can tell the difference or not.
And then we'll release the bundle.
And then
we'll call up the indie bundle.
Yeah, it'll just be called the humanity bundle. Deal with it.
Deal with it.
All right, folks. Well, while we work on that project, we always like getting emails. experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and the place that we like to be assholes is experiencepoints.net. You can find us being jerks Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday evening, so come on down and bring your friends. We're pretty nice. I think we're all right people,
if you
right?
have any, you jerks.
You jerk. You animal.
All right, folks, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. So...